Achtung, es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knitter ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Eine Barra ist ja irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 Gigabyte für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd.
Lebara,
deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter lebara.de.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Für alle ein Fest zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Volvic Naturell, 1,5 Liter für nur 49 Cent, zuzüglich Pfand. Oder Almare Räucherlachs XXL, 220 Gramm für nur 3,49 Euro. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Welcome to the Richard Serrett Show. Coming up next... A story so devastating, it will shatter every illusion you've been sold about Canada's so-called world-class healthcare system. A 16-year-old boy, Finlay van der Werken, walked into an Ontario hospital in pain, begging for help, and never came out alive. 8 hours. 8 hours on a stretcher in a hallway, ignored while his vital signs crashed, and no one, not a nurse, not a doctor, not a single soul in this taxpayer-funded utopia, did a thing. This isn't a fluke. It's not an accident. It's the cold, brutal reality of socialized medicine. Finlay's story is a horror movie playing out on repeat across the country. But the elites, they'll tell you how our healthcare system is the envy of the world. Socialized medicine is progress. Tonight, I'm not going to celebrate it. I'm going to burn it down. The Richard Serrett Show, off and running for Friday, August the 1st. In the year of our Lord, 2025. Facta, non verba.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something. You'll see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will...
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption. This is The Richard Serrett Show.
Let me tell you a story. A story that should shake you to your core. His name was Finlay van der Werken. He was 16 years old. A towering young man at 6'2", size 15 shoes. A gentle giant, Finlay wasn't just a kid with a future, he was the future. He had a big heart, a sharp mind, and a smile that made people feel safe. He was a hockey player, a lifeguard, a big brother, a son, a friend. He had dreams of becoming a veterinarian, of graduating, of going to prom, of starting his adult life. But none of that happened. Back on February the 9th, 2024, Finlay walked into a Canadian hospital and never walked out. And here's the part that should make your blood boil. Finlay didn't die because of a rare disease. He didn't die because of an unavoidable accident. He died because Canada's healthcare system, the system we're told to worship, the system we're taxed into oblivion to fund, ignored him to death. Finlay spent 8 excruciating hours lying on a stretcher in the hallway of Oakville-Trafalgar Memorial Hospital, gasping for air, his oxygen levels plummeting, while doctors and nurses walked past him. For 8 hours, his parents, Hazel and GJ, begged for something to help. Hazel and GJ begged for someone to help. And for 8 hours, no one did. By the time a doctor finally saw him, it was too late. He went into cardiac arrest. Machines kept his heart beating for a while. He was transferred to Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto, where his parents had to make the gut-wrenching decision to take him off life support. Now, we could pretend this was an isolated incident, a tragic fluke, a mistake in an otherwise functioning system. That would be comforting, but it would be a lie. Finley Vanderbilt's death was not an accident. It was the predictable, inevitable consequence of a healthcare system designed to fail. A system where compassion is rationed, urgency is smothered by bureaucracy, and human lives are reduced to triage codes on a clipboard. You see, Canada's political elites love to pat themselves on the back for our universal healthcare system. They love to tell you it's the envy of the world. They love to chant slogans about fairness and equity and compassion. But slogans don't save lives. Systems do. And our system is killing people. Under the Canadian triage and acuity scale, level 2 patients like Finley are supposed to be seen by a doctor within 15 minutes. Not 15 hours, not 8 hours, 15 minutes. But on that night, Finley waited and waited and waited. No one came. His vital signs were blinking red alerts. His oxygen levels were dropping like a stone. But the system did what it always does. It shrugged. The bureaucrats at Halton Healthcare issued a press release. They said they're dedicated to high-quality, compassionate care. They said they're listening to feedback. Words are cheap. Their platitudes won't bring Finley back. And make no mistake, this is not an isolated case. Across the country, thousands of Canadians are dying, not because medicine has failed them, not because technology is lacking, but because the system, the structure, the bureaucracy, the very design of our healthcare apparatus is engineered for indifference. According to data from SecondStreet.org, over 15,000 Canadians died last year while waiting for surgeries or diagnostic scans. 15,000. That's not a statistic. That's a national disgrace. And that number? It's incomplete. It doesn't even include Quebec, Alberta, Newfoundland, and other provinces that refuse to track or report those numbers. Why? Because they don't want you to know. Since 2018, over 74,000 Canadians have died while on wait lists. That's not a malfunction of the system. That is the system. And yet, we're told to celebrate it. We're told to worship the idea of free healthcare. But nothing in life is free. You pay for it with your taxes. You pay for it with your time. And in cases like Finley's, you pay for it with your life. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Universal health care in Canada is not universal care. It's universal waiting. It's a bureaucratic monopoly that prioritizes appearances over outcomes. Imagine designing a system where you forbid competition, where you actively block innovation, where hospitals are disincentivized to improve because they have no fear of being outperformed. That's Canada's healthcare system. In 2024, we spent $372 billion on healthcare. That should buy world-class care. It doesn't. It buys wait lists. It buys bloated bureaucracies. It buys virtue-signaling press releases while families bury their loved ones. If this system worked, would Hazel and G.J. Vanderwerken be forced to start Finley's voice just to get someone to notice what went wrong? If this system worked, would thousands of Canadians be sitting in pain, in limbo, on endless waiting lists for basic procedures? Would parents be forced to decide whether to drive to their local hospital or gamble on making it to a children's hospital an hour away? Canada's healthcare system is not failing because of a lack of money. It's failing because it's structurally rotten. You could pour another $1 trillion into it tomorrow, and nothing would change. Because it's not about money. It's about design. It's about a monopoly that treats patients as statistics and bureaucrats as untouchable overlords. And yet, the political class refuses to consider any alternative. Why? Because in their mind, socialized medicine isn't about results. It's about ideology. It's a symbol. It's a badge of moral superiority. But that ideology is killing people. Finley Vanderwerken's dead because of it. Here's what they won't tell you. In Europe, there are universal healthcare systems that actually work. systems that blend public funding with private delivery, systems that allow competition, systems that prioritize patients over bureaucratic empires. But in Canada, the very suggestion of private healthcare is treated as heresy, as if the mere idea of choice is a threat to our national identity. So instead, we stick with a model that is literally killing us. Hazel and GJ now live with the agony of what happened during those 8 hours. They ask themselves if they should have driven further, if they should have screamed louder, if they should have defied the very system that promised to help them. But here's the truth. It should not have been their burden. They did everything right. They trusted the system. And the system betrayed them. What does the system offer in return? Hollow apologies, PR statements, meeting with hospital administrators who cry crocodile tears and promise to do better. But nothing changes, because this isn't about fixing healthcare. It's about protecting the narrative. The narrative that Canada is morally superior because of its healthcare system. The narrative that keeps politicians in power and bureaucrats fat and happy. But the reality? It's a national scandal. It's a quiet, bureaucratic slaughterhouse. And it will continue until we find the courage to confront it. Finley's death wasn't an anomaly. It was the inevitable result of a system where no one is accountable, where rationing is a feature, not a bug, where the comfort of ideology outweighs the urgency of human life. So what now? Do we keep pretending this is fine? Do we keep reciting platitudes while more Canadians die on hallway stretchers? Or do we finally demand better? Hazel and GJ are fighting for that change. They're fighting so that no other family has to endure the agony they live with every single day. But they can't do it alone. This system will not fix itself. The bureaucrats won't fix it. The politicians won't fix it. Only we can fix it. We need to start by telling the truth. Socialized healthcare is a moral failure. It's cost too many lives. It's destroyed too many families. It's time to bury the myth of Canadian healthcare. Because if we don't, more Finleys will die. More families will be shattered. And the political class will keep smiling and telling you that everything is fine. But it isn't fine. It's a disgrace. And the longer we stay silent, the more blood will be on all our hands. Coming up next, the Liberal government's woke fairy tale that paints our nation as a slave-built dumpster fire. Stephen Guilbeault, the felon-turned-minister of Canadian identity, is spewing lies so absurd they'd make an historian cry. From Indigenous slave networks to the truth about 1834, I'll be back with that right after these.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam. Und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 Euro pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
Welcome back. Stephen Guilbeault, Canada's Minister of Canadian Identity, Culture, and Official Language, is a convicted felon and a walking insult to anyone with a shred of historical literacy. His latest ex post is a masterclass in idiocy, droning on about Emancipation Day and Canada's supposed history of slavery and enduring anti-black racism. This claptrap is so divorced from reality it could star in a comedy special, if only it weren't so dangerous. The Liberal government, led by this intellectual featherweight, is hell-bent on importing America's racial politics, slapping a Canadian flag on it, and calling it inclusion. But the truth, as laid bare by the Aristotle Foundation's Slavery in Canada, The Facts Rarely Told, is far uglier, far messier, and far less convenient for their sanctimonious narrative. Canada was not built on slavery, and no amount of woke posturing will rewrite that fact. Let's start with Guibeau's expo, shall we? He wants us to reflect on how people of African descent shaped our inclusive identity. Sounds heartwarming, except it's built on a lie so flimsy it collapses under the weight of a calendar. The British Empire abolished slavery in 1834, 33 years before Canada became a nation in 1867. That's not a typo, Stephen. It's basic arithmetic. Canada didn't exist as a country when slavery was outlawed across the empire. Yet here is our Minister of Identity peddling a narrative that assumes Canadians are too dim to check the dates. Slavery is a grotesque stain on human history, no question. But Canada's story isn't the American nightmare of mass chattel slavery. The U.S. enslaved 10 million people from 1619 to 1865. Canada, roughly 7,500 slaves, indigenous and black combined, over a similar period. That's not a rounding error. It's a fundamentally different reality. Here's where the woke brigade in Ottawa starts sweating. The Aristotle Foundation's report drops a bombshell. Slavery wasn't just a European import. It was woven into indigenous cultures long before any colonists set foot here. Vast indigenous slave networks stretched from the Missouri River Basin to the Great Lakes, trading captives for wealth, weapons, and power. In New France, 65% of slaves were indigenous, stolen and bartered along routes plied by the Huron, Iroquois, and others. If we're applying the same moral lens to colonial societies, dozens of First Nations were knee-deep in slavery. But don't expect Guibeau to mention that. It shatters the indigenous ways of knowing dogma the Liberals worship like a sacred cow. And it didn't vanish when the British banned slavery in 1834. Indigenous slavery lingered, especially on the Pacific coast. Take Makina, a Nootka Multh chief who, in 1803, massacred an English ship's crew and enslaved the two survivors along indigenous captives for over 2 years. Or Haida chief Albert Edward Eda Nsa, born in 1810. By 1883, 12 years after British Columbia joined Confederation, 18 years after the American Civil War, and a half a century after abolition, he was still holding slaves. The Pacific Coast was a slavery hotspot, pre- and post-Confederation, and it wasn't just the white man's doing. This isn't sanitizing history. It's exposing it, raw and unfiltered, in a way the Liberals refuse to touch it because it complicates their tidy victim-oppressor script. The colonists weren't choir boys, let's be clear. They bought slaves from indigenous suppliers, and New France saw a surge in the trade by the 18th century. Historian Marcel Trudel estimates 4,185 slaves, mostly indigenous, in what became Lower Canada from the 1600s to 1834. In Upper Canada and the Maritimes, up to 3,200 black slaves arrived after the American War of Independence, alongside 3,000 black loyalists who faced crude bigotry, even race riots in places like Shelburne, Nova Scotia. That's ugly, and it deserves to be confronted. But pretending Canada's history mirrors America's original sin is intellectual fraud. Our economy, politics, and culture weren't forged in the fires of slavery. The biggest impact slavery had here was indirect, sparking the American Civil War, which nudged our leaders toward Confederation to avoid getting sucked into the chaos. So why is Guibeau pushing this garbage? Because the Liberals are addicted to America's racial politics, importing it lock, stock, and barrel to score woke points. They see the U.S. reckoning and think, let's copy-paste that. Never mind that it distorts our history. Never mind that indigenous slavery was more impactful and longer-lasting than the European kind here. Never mind that Canada's story is one of scattered small-scale human trafficking, not the systemic horror of the American South. Facts don't matter to this government. Optics do. They want to signal they're morally superior, even if it means lying about who we are. The irony is thicker than a Canadian winter. Guilbeault, a man with a criminal record and a knack for saying stupid things, is tasked with defining Canadian identity. He's telling us our nation is steeped in anti-black racism and a slave-built legacy, stoking guilt and division where it doesn't belong. That's not inclusion, it's betrayal. He's telling kids Canada is rotten to the core, ignoring that we were a refuge for thousands escaping American slavery via the Underground Railroad. But that doesn't fit the script, so it's buried under buzzwords like systemic racism and decolonization. This government has turned history into a weapon, not a lesson. They've made a sport of pandering to every woke cause, from tearing down statues of our founders to rewriting curricula to guilt-trip kids into thinking Canada is a cesspool of oppression. They cherry-pick the past, ignoring inconvenient truths like Indigenous slave networks or the fact that Canada was a beacon for those fleeing American slavery. The Aristotle Report is a wake-up call, but don't expect Ottawa to read it. They're too busy tweeting platitudes and polishing their halos. If they did, they'd have to admit that their Americanized narrative is bunk. Canada wasn't built on slavery, and pretending it was cheapens the real suffering of those who endured it, here and elsewhere. Let's dig deeper into the Liberal playbook. This isn't just about Guilbeault's ex-post. It's about a broader agenda to reshape Canada into something it's not. They've turned our education system into a factory for self-loathing, teaching kids to apologize for their country rather than understand it. They've elevated Indigenous ways of knowing to a sacred status, but conveniently ignored parts of Indigenous history, like slavery, that don't fit their narrative. They're obsessed with importing American guilt as if Canada's own story isn't complex enough. The result? A generation of young Canadians who think their country is defined by shame, not resilience, ingenuity, or the hard-won progress of a nation that, yes, has flaws, but also has a hell of a lot to be proud of. And don't get me started on the hypocrisy. The Liberals love to lecture about inclusion while fostering division with their imported racial politics. They'll cry about anti-black racism but stay silent on the complexities of Indigenous slavery because that might offend their carefully curated coalition of activists. They'll tear down John A. Macdonald statues but won't touch the legacy of chiefs like Edda Nsa, who had slaves decades after Confederation. Why? Because it's easier to vilify dead white guys than to grapple with the messy reality of history. It's selective outrage, and it's as dishonest as it gets. Here's my challenge to Guilbeault and his woke warriors. Stop lying to us. Stop pretending Canada's history is America's twin. Acknowledge the British abolition of 1834, the Indigenous slave networks that outlasted it, and the small scale of slavery here compared to the U.S. Tell the whole story, warts, complexities, and all. Stop using history as a prop for your virtue signaling. And to Canadians, don't let these clowns redefine who we are. Our history is flawed, but rich with moments of courage, like the Underground Railroad, or the push for Confederation to keep Canada free from American turmoil. We don't need to grovel before a foreign narrative to prove we're decent people. Demand better from this government. Demand truth over ideology. Remind Guilbeault that being Minister of Canadian Identity means knowing what Canada actually is, not what you wish it was to score points with the woke mob. Read a history book, for heaven's sake, Stephen. And maybe you'll learn something. Until then, Canadians deserve better than your lies. I'm Richard Serrett. I'll speak to you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil. Unser